Well, I want to welcome you back to this course on personal and ministry assessment for Christian leaders. And if you were with us during our last session, our focus was on examining what the Bible has to say about communications. And so what we did is that we examined a number of key passages, three of which were found in the book of Ephesians. And then we looked at a very familiar text out of the book of Proverbs. In fact, to be specific, Proverbs 18:21, a text that is very popular and that I'm sure you're very well acquainted with. And then we also finished up by looking at a text out of the book of James, also another familiar passage in Scripture that deals with the importance of communication. And so what we did in that first lecture was really just laid a foundation that dealt with God's attitude or God's heart as it relates to communication. And we really looked at how important it is for us to understand that the gospel, the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ, has everything to do with every aspect of our being. And so if you are a Christian, then obviously reflecting back on the finished work of Christ. And in our first lecture, I mentioned that the late Francis Schaeffer coined a phrase which said, "How then shall we now live?" And so what Francis Schaeffer talked about in that phrase is that in light of the redemptive work of the cross, what impact does that have on us? Or to put it a different way, what is my response to what Jesus has accomplished in times past? What has, since Jesus has accomplished redemption for me and for you over 2,000 years ago, and now in the present being a recipient of that grace, what impact does the gospel have on my life? Well, for the writers of the New Testament, and especially the writers of the epistles, the response and the answer is everything. The gospel impacts everything. And that also includes the use of our tongue. Or to put it a different way, the gospel impacts human speech, human communication in every dimension. And so we spent time examining those passages of Scripture just to give us a sense or glimpse into the heart of God as it relates to the importance of being able to use words and to understand that words really matter. And so with that foundation laid, we want to transition in this particular lecture to talk about or to look at some tools that I believe are going to be beneficial in helping you to improve, to become a better communicator. Because again, I know that that's one of the reasons you tuned in. That's one of the reasons why you are taking this course, because you want to become better at what God has called you to do, the work that God has called you to do. And in order to do that, you need to be an effective communicator. And so in this lecture, our focus is going to be on constructive communication. And as I indicated, we're going to examine or look at a couple of tools which I believe are going to be helpful for you in becoming as an effective communicator as you possibly can. Now, as we did in the previous lecture, I'd like to begin by giving you a few thoughts to reflect on as we move into this particular lecture. And the first thought that I'd like for you to just take a minute to reflect on, and it's this question. What have you learned throughout your life about constructive communication? Now, as you well know, all communication is not constructive. In fact, some of it can be very destructive. But what have you learned about the importance of being able to communicate effectively? What has your life experiences been? I know in my life, I've learned that as a minister of the gospel, as a facilitator of workshops, that being able to communicate in such a way is highly important to the well-being of others, or being able to get across my point, or being able to reach people where they are. Constructive communication is very, very important, and I have learned that in my own life, and I trust that you have as well. A second thing I'd like for you to think about is this. Think about the different settings or situations that require different communication approaches. Now, as this, you're watching this video of me doing this lecture, you may or may not know this, but I'm in a studio. And I'm being recorded, and it requires a different communication approach. There are no people here, and so it requires for me to approach the communication, being a communicator in a different way, because the setting is different. There are no people here, and so I can't really draw off of the energy in the room. And even if I was in a classroom, there are different ways to communicate when you're in a classroom. There are different ways to communicate when you're giving a sermon. There are different ways to communicate if you're in a small group or if you're on a one-on-one situation. The setting could be in a counseling situation, to where you are counseling someone, and so. Different situations, different settings require different approaches to communication. And so I just want you to think about the different settings in which you, in your own ministry, when you communicate. And also think about the different groups that you communicate to. Communicating to millennials is a little different than maybe communicating to a builder or what we call builders or Generation X or Generation Y. Different generations respond differently to different kinds of communication. And so to just ponder and think about the different settings and situations that require different communication approaches. Now, here's a thought. Why is constructive communication important to performance of a group? Why is constructive communication important to the performance of a group? When you think about Jesus had a group. His group was made up primarily of 12 guys. He called them disciples. Jesus was a master at communicating. Jesus was very constructive in his communication, particularly with that group. And because Jesus used different communication techniques, different methodologies, Jesus was very, very important. And as a result of Jesus' use of constructive communication, it impacted the performance of the group. It impacted the group that was called disciples. And so think about that in your own setting. That with a group, you need to understand a little bit about group dynamics and the importance of being able to utilize different communication skills and techniques that help a group perform effectively and for that group to be proficient in exactly what they're trying to do. So think about that. Think about the different group settings that you've had and the importance of constructive communication has been to the overall functioning of the group. And then, what real world barriers prevent healthy communication, even among people who have a compelling need or a desire to work well together? We all know that there are barriers that occur in the context of communication. Some of them are cultural differences. Some of them are linguistic differences. There are all kind of real world differences. Some of those differences relate to body language and how we posture ourselves when we communicate. And we need to be aware that there are a lot of things that get in the way or inhibit communication for being effective. especially in this technology world that we live in. Sometimes when you try to communicate via email or via Twitter or via Facebook, sometimes when we communicate, things just don't come out the way we intended them to come out. Sometimes what we say gets misconstrued, gets misinterpreted because of the venue that we're using in order to communicate. So there are real world barriers that prevent, that get in the way of healthy communication. And so we're going to spend some time in this lecture examining some of those issues. And in particular, we're going to focus on providing you with some tools or a framework that I believe will help you to overcome some of those barriers in the context of communicating in the real world. And so what I like to do, I like to get all of these up on the screen, is that we're going to talk about a tool that we call from debate to dialogue. And this particular concept of debate to dialogue actually comes out of the world of systems thinking. And a gentleman by the name of Peter Senge, who was a professor at MIT, did a lot of work from his, he wrote a big thick book called the Fifth Discipline Field Book. And a lot of these this concept will come out of that particular work. And what this shows is that there are different ways to communicate. And we call this, again, from debate to dialogue. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to walk through these one after the other, explore and examine the benefits, and we're going to define them. But after we define them, we're going to look at the benefits of these different communication approaches, as well as some of the limitations that are involved. So at least you'll have a different sense of the different ways in which people communicate and where these are most appropriately utilized. So let us transition now to look at what we mean by debate. Well, let me ask you, before I put the definition up there, what do you think about when you hear the word debate? I'm willing to bet that perhaps the first thing that you think about is a political debate, because especially in our country, again, I'm in the United States. I'm not exactly sure where some of all of you are, but just think about that debate is where you have these political debates where you have the Democrats and the Republicans on one side, and they are hashing out their political views. And in our country, every year during a presidential election, we have major debates where all the candidates are up. And there's a moderator, and the moderator fields these questions, and each person has an allotment of time to present his or her position or point, and they go back and forth. And so I'm almost sure that automatically came to mind, because that's what happens when most people think about debates. Well, my favorite movie is a movie called The Great Debaters. And it's about an African-American debate team, a real-life African-American debate team that actually won a debate championship against, I think it was Harvard. I can't remember all the fine details of it right now, but it was at Harvard or at Yale, that this little small, predominantly black college had a debate team, and they won that debate that year. They became the National Debaters. It's an incredible movie. And so if you have not watched the movie The Great Debaters, I commend it to you. It's a fascinating movie, and I think, you'll enjoy it a whole lot. But let's return back to the lecture real quick. As we think about the word debate, the definition of debate in its literal form means to beat down or to argue with an unmovable point of view. Generally speaking, this unmovable point of view certainly may apply in most cases. But when I like to think about debate, debate is obviously, it says to beat down, but I don't want you to get the idea that debate is about beating down people. When we talk about debate and to beat down, what this definition has in mind here is the beating down of ideas. True debate is about ideas, not about attacking an individual person. In logic, we call that ad hominems. That is a personal attack. Since I've been a Christian, I really have an affinity toward Christian philosophy as well as apologetics. And one of the things that I've learned in apologetics and having taken logic and all of that is that if you cannot argue the point, you'll find out if a person really has a point or not if they start attacking a person's character. And so the whole adage is that if you don't have an argument, attack the person. And we see that a lot in the course of political discourse, or when people have a different position, as opposed to arguing their point, they end up attacking the person. They start talking about the person, bring up something about their character, or they may say something about a family member, or say something else about a person that is not very God honoring. But when we're dealing with true debate, the thing I want you to remember is that true debate is about ideas. It is about ideas, and where you have one person presenting his position, another person presenting their position, you get all of the ideas out on the table, and the best idea wins. That's what debate is all about. And so as we see here that the goal of debate is to win, it's not so much about winning and beating up people. The idea is about the winning of the argument. In other words, the best idea that that's on the table is the idea that we go with. The benefit of debate is that multiple positions are on the table, and all different points of view are able to. So you look at all points of view to make a point. That's what I really was trying to communicate. So each point gets an opportunity to be placed on the table. Again, in a real formal debate, one side takes one position, the other side takes the other position. They make their argument, they make their case, then the other person counters to make their point. And so you get multiple positions on the table, and that in true debate style, true debate is very healthy. It's something that we all want to engage in. But tragically, I think today debate has a bad word. It has a bad connotation. But it should not be that way, because debate is about ideas. Debate is about, man, you put your position out there, I put my position out there, and the best idea wins. And it could be just as simple as the idea about where we're going to go on vacation. And so you debate, you get the multiple positions on the table about where we're going to go on vacation and what's going to be the best way to do it. Your wife may have a point. Your children may have a position on it. But you get all the ideas on the table and you decide, and you may do your cost benefit analysis, and where you say, well, let's do this. And this is the advantage of going to Florida. Over going against Michigan. I don't know where it is that you may be going. Just put it all out there on the table. Get all the ideas out, and each person argue their point, and then a decision is made. So debate can be very healthy and beneficial. The limitation of debate is that it produces winners and losers. But again, the idea here is not so much that the person is losing. It's the idea that has lost. There's a better idea. Not that, again, we're attacking the person, that the person necessarily has lost, but we produce winners and losers as it relates to ideas. Let's talk about polite discussion. Polite discussion is another form of communication. And when we think about polite discussion, the classic definition of polite discussion is to beat around or to keep things at a surface level. I remember a number of years ago, I was in Houston, Texas. My sister-in-law lives in Houston, and ordinarily when I go to towns where There are people that I know. I try to connect with some of them and try to stay connected. And so I called my sister-in-law and said, hey, you want to do lunch? And so she said, yes. And we went to, I can't remember what restaurant it was, but I think it was an Applebee's. But it really doesn't matter which restaurant it was. Just so you'll know is that we had lunch. We sat down. The hostess brought us to our table and brought us silverware. And for whatever reason, the hostess came back, and she started telling us all of these intricate details about her personal life. Now, we just met her. All we knew was her first name. But the next thing we knew about her failed marriage. We knew about her ex-husband and all the anger and the hostility that she had toward him and how bad he was as a husband. And we're sitting there looking at ourselves like, wow, how did we get here? We had just met her. Now, you might say, well, what's that got to do with polite discussion? Well, my point is that really wasn't a polite discussion because we had just met her. Ordinarily, when you meet someone for the first time, you really don't go real deep. You kind of surfacey in your conversations because you really don't know them. You kind of talk about things like, well, how's the weather, where you're from, and you may ask if you're married or how many kids that you have, but generally you don't go real deep with people you first meet. You kind of break the ice and you want to get to know people. So again, you find common things to talk about. It could be that you walk into a coffee shop and you see someone reading a book, and you may say, hey, what book is that you're reading? And they may tell you about the book. And so you just engage in small talk. That's what polite discussion is all about, because you really don't know the person that you are talking about. And the person that you're talking to. So when you think about the goal of polite discussion has at its goal is to avoid threat or discomfort. When my sister-in-law and I were talking to that precious lady at that restaurant, trust me, we didn't feel threatened, but we were uncomfortable. We felt rather discomforted because we did not know her. And for her to just kind of unload on us in that particular setting when all we were trying to do was have lunch, kind of get caught up with one another, it wasn't the appropriate place for us to be engaging in that kind of conversation because we really did not know her. So polite discussion has its place. And again, the goal is to avoid threat and discomfort. The benefit of polite discussion is that it allows space and time to develop the friendship and to build trust. So when you first meet someone, polite discussion is appropriate. I know in the context of the work that we do with the DeVos Urban Leadership Initiative, we have a cohort model, and every 15 months we bring new people in our program, and the people who are in that cohort for the most part don't know one another. They've just met one another. And so the interactions that they have with each other at the beginning of the program is polite discussion. And that's okay, because we want we provide a space for them to get to know one another. And so polite discussion allows you to engage people, not at a deep level, but at a level enough to where you can begin to build trust and have small talk with one another. And then in time, as the relationship deepens and there's more trust, then you're able to move on to the next level of constructive communication, which we'll talk about in just a second. But understand this, there is a limitation of skilled discussion, polite discussion, and that is important things don't get said. And that is because it's not the appropriate place or time for it. And so that's okay, and understanding that, and what we mean by important things really is really deep things, deep intimate things and details about another person's life really don't get said at this stage. And so there is a proper place for polite discussion. So just want you to know that as a tool, debate has its proper place. Polite discussion has its proper place. Now let's move on to a third type of communication, and it is called skilled discussion. A definition of skilled discussion is to seek and to tell the truth. To seek and to tell the truth. It's about planning. It's about problem solving. Skilled discussion goal is to act effectively together. Now right away you may be thinking that that sounds very familiar, because this is what you do in the context of a group. Typically, skilled discussion can happen with two people, but more often than not, skilled discussion takes place in the context of groups. And you need skilled discussion in the context of a group in order for the group to work effectively. And the goal, again, is to seek, to tell the truth, to plan, and to problem solve. The benefit of skilled discussion is that it produces good decisions and plans, and it maximizes, here again, group productivity. So when you're in a staff meeting or a planning meeting or any other kind of meeting that you might have, skilled discussion is what you really want to be engaged in. You want people seeking and telling the truth. You want people to express their opinions about what's going on, whether it's dealing with a project, a new venture that you're about to embark upon. You want individuals to feel comfortable to be able to seek, to tell the truth, so that in your planning, all the ideas get out on the table. I know on the our staff, the staff that I'm a part of, we engage in this all the time. And we've created a culture that encourages each member of our staff to seek to tell the truth so that our planning and our problem solving can be highly efficient and productive. And so our goal is to act collectively together for the common good of the advancement of this project, this plan that we have. And so we are trying to work good together. And again, the benefit is that it produces good decisions and plans, and it maximizes group productivity. However, there's a limitation of skilled discussion, and that is that it requires everyone's input. It requires everyone's commitment, everyone's participation. So this is something that you definitely have to work at in the context of a group, and there has to be a level of trust where individual members of your group do not feel that they're going to be attacked by expressing themselves openly. And so you have to build a culture that allows people to be able to speak their minds about a given plan, whatever it is that you may be trying to accomplish and do. And so you want to have these multiple ideas on the table as you plan and problem solve. So again, it requires everyone's input, everyone's commitment in order to be able to do that. Now, as we transition to our final type of communication, this one we call dialogue, and again, most of you are very familiar with the word dialogue. We use it in different ways and in different capacities in the context of, we may say, well, we want to have a dialogue with someone. But as we think about, really what I want to emphasize here is, as you think about dialogue, dialogue has the idea that there's meaning flowing from you to me. Dialogue is at a real deep level. It's not only do I hear what you are saying, I also tap into the emotion behind what you are saying. Then the idea behind dialogue, again, is that dialogue is very, very empathetic. In other words, you're stepping into the shoes of the person when you engage in meaningful dialogue. So in order for you really to engage in meaningful dialogue, you have to kind of step into the shoes of the other person to see things through their eyes. But it doesn't mean that you necessarily have to agree with their position. But it does mean that you at least understand where they are coming from. Hence the idea of meaning flowing from one to the other. But here's the deal. You can't engage in dialogue if you haven't totally bought in to the other person. So now I'd like you to imagine my wife comes to me and says, honey, we need to have a talk. We need to I have a serious matter I need to talk to you about, and I have a book in my hand. Now, just so you know, I'm a reader. I love to read books, and as a matter of fact, I read about, on average, 2 to 3 books a month. That's my goal. I just love to read. I'm still tethered to the paper books. Now, if you're into the technology and if you like reading on your tablet, that's fine. But I'm kind of a traditionalist when it comes to that. I like just reading I like reading a good hard book. You know, I like reading books, and so for me, if I'm sitting reading a book and my wife comes in and says, "Can we talk?" And I said, of course, but I never put the book down. And I tell my wife, and she says, are you listening to me? And I said, yes, I'm listening to you. And she said, well, you can't be listening to me because you are still reading the book. And then if I just kind of just lay the book on my chest or turn the book over, am I really still listening? Have I quite entered into dialogue? Well, not really. In order for me to really enter into dialogue with my wife in that particular setting, I need to put the book aside, turn to my wife, engage her face to face, and say, let's talk. And then my goal is to listen very intentively, tune my ear to the emotions of what she is saying, so that I understand where she is coming from. Now, again, it doesn't mean that I agree necessarily with what my wife is saying, but I very empathetically step into her shoes while I try to understand her point of view. That's what dialogue is all about. And the goal of dialogue is to deepen shared understanding. And I said to my wife, honey, I understand where you're coming from. I truly understand. Again, the goal isn't to agree, but I do understand. We miss that a lot in our nation today when people are fighting with one another and people are not able to sit down and understand the position of the other person. Right now, it's just like we all about just attacking. And all I want is for my position to be heard, never to really to understand where the other person is coming from. Again, the goal is not to agree necessarily with the person's position, but can you at least empathize with where they're coming from? That's what dialogue is all about. But I'm worried that in our nation and in our country, that's not where we are. The benefit of constructive communication, this particular constructive communication called dialogue, it helps everyone to understand, again, complex situation, different points of view, and it leads to deeper understanding. And then I like the latter part, respect and action. You know, as Christians, we are to respect our fellow man. We don't have to always agree with our fellow man, but I believe God has a mandate on our hearts that we respect one another. That's what dialogue is all about. And so this is communicating at a very deep level here. Again, and I'm really emphasizing that it's not about agreeing as it is about understanding the other person's point of view. But now there are obviously limitations to this. The limitation of dialogue that it takes more time. It takes time to sit down to listen to someone else's position. It takes time to sit down to listen to your child, your teenager who is hurting. It takes time to listen to, again, a person who may have been hurt or a person who is frustrated about something. It takes time in this fast-paced, hustle-bustle, microwave society that we live in. It takes time to engage in meaningful dialogue, which is why so many of us don't do it. But I believe, I'm convicted that as a Christian, as a follower of Jesus, Jesus made time to hear people. Jesus made time to hear the deep pains of people. I believe it's why when the Pharisees brought the woman caught in adultery and after Jesus wrote on the ground and asked, says, "He who without sin, let them cast the first stone," and he never looked up. And then when he stood up, he looked at the woman and said, "Woman, where thou accusest?" And there was no one else there. But in a very compassionate way, Jesus says, "Go and sin no more. Go and sin no more." He understood the deep hurt that she had gone through. And that, even though he spoke the truth to her, he did it in a way that honored her dignity and honored her humanity. That's what dialogue does. Again, dialogue is about understanding, not about agreeing. And so as we just to kind of recap here, as we bring this lesson to a close, we looked at the different types or approaches to communication. We looked at debate, and we've looked at a polite discussion. We looked at skilled discussion, and we have looked at dialogue. All of these different types of communication are valid, and they are applicable in different situations, different settings. The challenge for you is to be able to go out and practice these and apply these in these different settings. What I hope you don't do is just take this information into your head and it just stays in your head. I'm challenging you to go out and apply this. Go out and practice dialogue. Go out and practice skilled discussion the next time you have a group, and see what happens. Because it really doesn't make a difference if all you do is just take this information in, and if you don't apply it, you don't do anything with it. So I'm throwing down the gauntlet and I'm issuing a challenge that you do something with this great information. So real quick again, by summary, as we look at this continuum, as we see here from debate and polite discussion, these two are more conventional. In other words, people use these more often than not. This is what people are mostly comfortable with, and these are easier to engage in. Skilled discussion and dialogue tends to be more in tune to sources of group thought and bring them to the surface. Again, these are more conventional, get used more often than not, requires a little bit more skill in using these, not as conventional. In other words, it's not something that you use every single day in every single context. Skilled discussion and dialogue, however, are real good sources to be used in group settings. So summary, what have we learned? We always want to kind of pause and reflect and ask the question, what have we learned as we bring things to a close? Well, number one, one point that we've learned is that constructive communication is essential to group performance. So if you want your group to perform at a high level, it is important for you to put into practice and to implement these skills that center around constructive communication. Secondly, you need to understand that approaches to communication are varied. There are different ones. Again, remember, debate, skilled discussion, polite discussion, dialogue. Communication approaches are very varied, and it all depends on the situation and setting that you find yourself in. You have to become very skilled, again, in knowing what communication approach to use in the different situations that you find yourself in. Also remember that with every approach to communication, there are not only benefits, but there are also limitations to each one of these. You need to be aware of those, because not being aware of the benefits and limitations will in some way inhibit you being as effective as you possibly could be in utilizing these different approaches to communication. And now, as always, as we prepare to close out, I want to take a minute to pray. If you bow your heads with me as we close in prayer. Gracious God, I want to thank you again for this opportunity to share these important principles around effective communication, and in this case, these different approaches to communication. I bless my dear brothers and sisters who have joined me in this lesson, and I pray that you will help them to apply these approaches to communication in their different ministries, to apply them in their homes, to apply them in whatever area that you have called them into ministry, that will help them to become better husbands, better fathers, and to become better ministers of the gospel of Jesus Christ. I give you praise, Father. I give you honor, and I give you glory. In Jesus' name, amen. God bless you.